Our final presenter is Tracy Thompson. Tracy is an MPH candidate and outreach specialist at Michigan State University. She focuses on collaborations and partnerships to improve community health. While public policy director in a Savannah hospital, Tracy addressed state and federal health policy, oversaw community benefits, and served on community boards. Tracy spent 15 years at the NIH on policy and communication. Tracy has several articles in journals, including Molecular Carcinogenesis, Clinical Advances in Hematology and Oncology, and the Journal of the NCI. So please join me in welcoming Ms. Thompson. And her topic will be, do Healthy Corner Stores maintain improvements after the completion of an intervention?
Thank you, Tracy. Hi, everybody. So yes, I'll start as everyone else saying I have no relationships to disclose. We started this project several years ago before I was considering a master's in public health. I was working as part of a group and was overseeing a project that was funded by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. This project was attempting to address childhood obesity by trying to come at it from a multitude of directions, addressing issues within the school, within the community, and also with healthy messaging. And it involved collaboration of many different departments at Michigan State, including nutrition, kinesiology, and several other and communications, and several others. And it was a very large two-year project. My primary work was in the community, but it was focused on four low-income, ethnically diverse elementary schools, and also the neighborhoods that were surrounding it. We defined the surrounding neighborhood as the areas from which the families, those children who went to the schools, where their families lived. We were trying to address healthy eating and physical fitness, and my focus was on the community piece. There's a reference down here on the big Project Fit project, but the Healthy Corner Store pilot that we did was a piece of the community component. So we did many different things trying to improve access to physical fitness with healthy messaging, but a Healthy Corner Store was one attempt. Before starting that project, we looked at the neighborhoods and mapped where all the current stores or grocery stores or markets, anything that called itself a grocery store, a market, or that accepts SNAP or WIC was included. And we did a NEMS for stores, NEMS S, on each of those and showed that while it was not a food desert, there were lots of stores there. A lot of them had poor access to the healthier types of foods. And so that's why we decided to do a Healthy Corner Store project. We modeled it after the food trusts and used their network to inform the way we went forward. We did an assessment, as I said, with the nutrition environment measure surveys for stores. We did it pre and post the intervention. At the time, it was a pilot. We involved four small markets. One dropped out near the end of the intervention. The benefits that we offered were small capital investments. We offered nutrition education, we did help with sourcing, and we did a lot of marketing. And this included things like sending coupons to the announcing, you know, your store has become a Project Fit Healthy Corner Store, and here's a coupon for $1 off if you buy what we consider a healthy food, and we define that for them. So how do we define healthy food? We called healthy food whole grain carbs, low-fat dairies, any kind of fruit, fresh, frozen, canned, but it had to be in juice or light syrup. We called any type of vegetable, especially with lower sodium, and nuts and beans. So here are the neighborhood characteristics. You'll notice that store C actually kind of straddles two neighborhoods. The first neighborhood, and I should say this is also in Grand Rapids, Michigan, the first neighborhood has the largest population, and it's primarily Hispanic, about half. The second, where Store B is located, is also highly Hispanic. A third of the residents in both of these are children, and there's fairly low education and high poverty. East Hills is primarily white, and it has less children, as well as, but it also has lower education and high poverty. And then Baxter, of course, you can see is primarily African American, again with low education and high poverty. So these three stores, A, B, and C, were fairly different. The largest, C, had seven aisles, three cash registers, and the capital improvement that we did with that store was we repaired their cooler. They had a really cool cooler sitting along the edge filled with just random stuff because it didn't actually cool anything. The B was the middle-sized, five aisles, two cash registers, and they got a new freezer. And the smallest store had really limited space, and what they wanted to do was have an outside kiosk so that they could, in season, offer fresh fruits and vegetables. So these are the intervention results that we saw at the time, of the beginning and end of the intervention. We saw improvements in A and store. We saw improvements in both store B and C, but we did not see improvements in store A. It actually reduced. If you'll remember, that was a smaller store. So to show you kind of a few pictures of what it looked like, the cooler before was, again, just stacked with whatever they could kind of fit in there. But afterwards, it worked nicely. We also did a lot of aisle rearrangements and wayfinding, and used signage to try to educate the patrons about what was considered a fit food. You can see the freezer space was limited there. There was a little ice cream freezer, that was all they had, but they got a new freezer space. And there's the kiosk addition. So this is just kind of to show the timeline. So primary intervention, we obviously took a time point zero before and a time point one after, and there was about 18 months in between, about a year and a half of allowing the intervention to proceed. And that was the end of the intervention. The funding ended at that point, and there was no other interaction with the store owners. What I've done as part of my master's and is this part of the presentation is the follow-up 20 months after the end of the intervention and the end of the funding for this project. So we went back, I went back 20 months afterwards, we went back 20 months afterwards and did a follow-up using the exact same tool, the NIMS. And this is to show the difference in the stores. And if you can look, I primarily focus on the bottom where we're looking at any fruit product. Again, store A seems to have continued to go down from the beginning. Before the start of the intervention, they had 17 fruit products. They went down to 11 at the end of the intervention and down to 8 in follow-up. What I was really interested to learn, though, was that store B and store C did improve, which we had reported earlier in a publication, did improve in their fruit products, but they continued to improve even 20 months after the end of the funding. So that was one of the concerns that I had in the beginning of the project in doing a Healthy Corner Store project, was the fact that what's going to happen at the end of this when the funding and the researchers go away. And so this was really interesting to see. One of the anecdotal pieces of information is that store A saw a change in management from the time of our recruitment. And so it's kind of interesting to notice that the efforts we put in to educate and help that store owner were kind of lost in that shift. So here's vegetable products, and again, we're following store A. We're seeing it lose its variability in vegetables products, while store B and C continue to improve. And this is dairy, bread, and beef. And again, we see similar certainly in the whole wheat with them improving. Actually, with this one, store A did improve in whole wheat and in low-fat dairy. Store B improved in two of those categories. And store C improved in dairy, but actually lost a little bit in whole wheat. So overall, two out of the three stores have sustained and even increased their healthy food scores. These are really low numbers, but I was really interested in trying to see if we could follow up with this and see what the interaction or the results of allowing the stores to continue on their own without any input from the researchers or the program directors. And so it was interesting to see that two out of the three continued to increase after the final interactions of the intervention happened. And certainly our conclusions that we find that Healthy Corner Store programs may continue to be successful in increasing access to healthy foods even after the completion of the intervention and funding has happened. And as I mentioned before, anecdotally, store owner enthusiasm for the project appears to be an important factor in sustaining or increasing changes. And I would like to acknowledge that my practicum mentor was Laura Jaskiewicz, and my advisor was Robert Glandon. So, any questions? Thank you. Yeah?
Do we know about the people who are shopping there? They must have had an impact, seems to me, on whether those places would continue to have those healthy foods.
Yes, the question is, what impact did the patrons of the store have on whether or not the store owners continued to keep healthy foods in their stores? And that certainly is a really good point. And during the intervention, when we had funding, we did do interviews with the patrons, and we found that all of them, including the store that lost some of its improvements, they all expressed that they really enjoyed the changes and thought they would purchase more healthy foods. So that would be, I think you're right, an interesting follow-up to see if maybe the store owners didn't get the same kind of feedback. Perhaps we worked really hard to try to create the demand, much as what one of the previous presenters talked about is, you certainly can't expect a person who's running a business to lose money on products every week. So we did a lot of work during the intervention to increase demand in the neighborhood. But of course, at the end of the project, we stopped doing that. But I think you're right, that would be a good follow-up. Any other questions? Yes?
Those corner stores in the inner city area, the turnover rate of the store owners is pretty high. So
right.
Within like 3 years, maybe after the store may be gone because they just don't make it. So how do you think about this sustainability issue in your project?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think part of what we tried to do in the intervention was to make it so that it became really a positive thing for the store owners. So as was mentioned earlier, we informed them about WIC standards, that there were ways that they could utilize this to increase their income, trying to encourage that. And you're right that a lot of the store owners turn over a lot. I think that's something that we need to consider in trying to find a way to pass that knowledge on, maybe make return visits even for short periods to kind of pass that knowledge on. Good point, thank you. Yes?
How do you collect the
farm
and be
So working with the Food Trust out of Philadelphia, we hired them as a consultant for a short period of time. And one of the things they said from their experience was go for the low-hanging fruit, go for the ones who are really wanting to do this, not the ones who don't. And that's really what we did. We went around and we had Hispanic as well as African-American. There were community organizers that worked with us, that we recruited to work with us to go to store owners. These were people who work in the community development aspects, and so they knew a lot of the store owners. They're kind of a trusted person. We asked them to go visit the store owners, introduce the idea of the project, and then follow up a couple of times and say, you know, here's how it's going to work, here's the potential benefits for you. We gave them talking points. So at that point, then we opened it up and said anybody in these areas who owns a store can apply to become part of this program. We got 6 applications and 2 dropped out and 4 that became our N, an N of 4. Yes.
Yeah. So in trying to, most stores in the type of neighborhoods are making low profit margins. You guys pointed to some studies around economics. It's very good that they're providing public products, but from a business owner standpoint, is this going to break even, or is it going to attract a different type of customer? Are we going to be able to offer different type of services? So at the end of the day, I can at least bring public products and maintain my current profit level, or maybe even make more profit. Can you guys share some of the work or studies that you guys are doing?
Well, I don't know that I can completely. The question was, can we justify the economics to the store owner to make it worth his or her time and convince them that this is something that will benefit them as well? I mean, I think we. I personally didn't use studies in those conversations with the store owners. More, I offered them some data around, this is your neighborhood, these are the numbers of people who are either using SNAP or WIC. Once a month the WIC cash gets loaded and those people can only buy 2% milk. So if you don't have 2% milk, they're not going to buy 2% milk from you. Certainly another piece of that was helping them in sourcing, which was also mentioned earlier. One of the anecdotal things we noticed was we would go into a store and we would find another store's name brand can of green beans. And so that store owner's, because he only wants to buy a small amount, he's going to, you know, the Meijer, which is kind of like the Walmart, and getting that brand of green beans and then upping the price and putting it on his shelf. And so one of the things we did was help that that store owner and the others find sourcing so that they're not having to add additional profit to the price. They're adding only one profit, if that makes sense. So, yes, ma'am.
Well, I'm just wondering, that person who's buying a product from another grocery store, if there hasn't been any kind of coordination with food pantries and the people who food pantries buy wholesale goods from for those kinds of stores, like the small produce, trying to figure out if produce is expensive and perishable, so if you can't buy a good source, then you know there could be, maybe there already is, connection. Those people who are providing pantries as a solution for
So there was a suggestion made that maybe there could be a coordination with pantries and small stores. One thing we played with was the idea of working with the farmers market in town to see if we can, some of those farmers also supply to restaurants, and seeing if some of them, but again, you're playing with, is it the really special heirloom that's out of the price range, and you're, so it's a lot of playing back and forth to get there. Yes, ma'am. So the question is, what did we base our definition of healthy on? And the second part was, what did the store owner find most compelling in our pitch? Is that correct? Okay. Primarily, I worked with a PhD, Catherine Alimo, out of Michigan State's Department of Nutrition, and she helped define that. I think she based it on the federal standards. Excuse me?
Probably the dietary guidelines.
Dietary guidelines, yes. As far as talking to the store owners, I really think trying to talk to them, I found what's in it for you was certainly a piece of it. They are business owners. They're in there to make a living. They wanted to hear that I already knew that, that I already knew that you're in here to make a living and I'm not trying to make you into a charity case. But they also were very compelled, the ones who decided they wanted to work with us, those people were very compelled with the idea of, I'm a part of this community and I want to help improve this community. So there was definitely a piece of that as well. Any other questions? Yes.
This is a question maybe really for all of you. Did you sort of partner with other kinds of forces in the community, either healthcare providers, either sort of health systems that might serve your communities, or individual, family medicine pediatricians in the area who could help, inform their people about what's going on, or faith-based organizations, or sort of whoever else kind of in the community, or even the Wicked Snap offices to kind of help the general awareness of, okay, we now have these great new resources, and, isn't this wonderful that, they need some. And along those lines, did you find any sort of partners that were particularly helpful?
Okay. The question is about partners and who we engaged. And for my particular project, we engaged a community development group. It was called Neighborhood Ventures. And what they do is they focus on the business development in the lower income areas of the city. And of course, from his perspective, the executive director of that organization, he doesn't care if it's a grocery store or a shoe store. He wants to help that store improve. And so, but this was really in his bailiwick because, it's helping a store owner become more economically viable. And so it was kind of, I work for the College of Human Medicine, the medical school at Michigan State. And so bringing the health piece to the economic piece was kind of our natural marriage, if that makes sense. I don't know if anybody else wants to.
Well, we didn't actually do intervention, but the market itself was developed by a group of private developers that have their own organization. And the market did do some things to try to reach out more to the community. So they held some tours in partnership with the shelter. There was a time when they had the opportunity when you were shopping at the farmer's market to buy extra produce that would be donated to the kitchen, things like that. It's nothing, they didn't work for a while.
From the supermarket angle, I've done some other research on what national programs. There's retail, it's being left up to retailers, basically at this point, whether or not they include much health. have to fact that, I mean, none of the programs, or very few of the programs that give financing to supermarkets require explicit health promotion after the stores are developed. So unless you're getting very early, which I would recommend to anyone as a practitioner, as a public health partner, whether you're a department and then you work for an academic medical center or a nonprofit, get in early in the development process and sort of make those asks and get those partnerships established. Because once the stores develop, you know, it's kind of, there's a lot of pieces at play. And I think some of the strongest examples of stores that really have authentic, like in-store clinics and Snap and WIC outreach in the stores, those are the ones that have partnerships sort of in the very early pre-development stages. So I would just offer that as an encouragement.
One more question.
Yes.
I had a question about nutrition education component of your intervention.
Right.
What did that for the incumbent delivering the education, and was that just solely with the store owners, or was it also to the customer that were shopping?
The question is about the nutrition education component of the Healthy Corner Store project, and we actually tried a little bit of both. Primarily, we focused both the patron and the store owner. Primarily, we did focus on the store owner, and it was kind of interesting because in some of the anecdotal conversations, you would find, you know, the store owner saying, yeah, I know we need to have healthier food, but I don't know what healthier food is, you know, like, and so we had discussions about, well, you know, green beans, but lower sodium green beans, and, you know, things like bread, but whole grain bread, or milk, but low fat milk, and, you know, those types of conversations. We had a registered dietitian on staff, and she did some of that. She also gave materials that we could, you know, hand them here for your reference. When you're ordering fruits and vegetables, here's some things to consider. When you're ordering chips, maybe consider baked, and, you know, things like that. Certainly with the patrons, the store owners were, despite the fact that I, you know, say that they were very enthusiastic, they were a little concerned about, are you guys going to be in here messing up my business? And so we were tried to be very respectful towards the store owners and not be in their store all the time. But what we did towards patron education was we did the wayfinders. We did, you know, this is what, you know, healthy food is, fruits and vegetables, low-fat dairy, and we would X, this is the low-fat dairy, and we would put it right by the, you know, low-fat milk, and we had Spanish and English on, you know, for both, and we had handouts, and we had various things like that. So that was more kind of indirect nutrition education, but we did do that.
Okay, thank you
thank
very
you.
Much.
We do have 5 more minutes if there are any questions for any of our panelists. Seeing none, thank you very much for coming to this session, and a final round of applause for our panelists.